Luke's story of Jesus' trial before Pilate and his crucifixion and death was heard in its original context in the frameworks of the experiences of Luke's audience. Luke's audiences were predominantly Jews, Hellenistic Jews, who were citizens of the various cities around the Mediterranean and in the Roman Empire. They knew, and I would suggest that you read, as preparation for telling this story, the story of the martyrdom of Eleazar and of the mother and seven boys in 2 Maccabees 6 and 7. It's the last part of chapter 6, the story of Eleazar, and the story of the boys is chapter 7. It was a story that was told with horror at the unjust treatment that was received by Jews at the hands of the Gentiles. That story is part of the background of this story. Another part of the background that is absolutely essential to realize is that this story was told and heard in the context of the aftermath of the Jewish war. Luke describes that explicitly in Jesus' last discourse with the disciples in Luke chapter 21, and specifically in the verses 20 through 24, but also, you know, in the section of the signs and persecutions that precede that, but especially, you know, the destruction of Jerusalem. This is an exact description of what happened some 15 to 20 years before the composition and distribution of Luke's story, which was sometime in the 80s, probably. So the memory of this enormous tragedy that had happened with the destruction of Jerusalem, the destruction of the temple, the murder by the Roman armies of tens of thousands of innocent Jews, and then the enslavement of a whole generation of young people who were taken to Rome as slaves, who marched in the triumph of Vespasian and Titus in Rome, and then were sold as slaves in the mines and as rowers of the ships and as sex slaves and so on throughout Rome. That too is in the background. And another thing that is in the background that I would suggest that you do is to read Suetonius' Life of Domitian. So if you just Google Domitian, D-O-M-I-T-I-A-N, and then read Suetonius' Life of Domitian, you will get a sense of what the emperor, who the emperor was at the time that Luke was telling his story. He was a maniac. He was probably the worst emperor in the entire history of Rome, in terms of the impact that he had on the overall moral fabric of Rome. And after he was assassinated, the Roman Senate issued a decree called the Damnatio Memoriae, which was that the memory of Domitian was to be eliminated from all things Roman. So all of his statues, all of his inscriptions, everything that was a sign of Domitian's presence was eliminated, torn down, destroyed, in order to try to eliminate the memory of him. Now, part of the reason for that was that he was he had assassinated and murdered many members of the Roman Senate, and so the Senate hated him. You know, so he did do some relatively good things as an administrator, but in terms of his overall life and character. And one of the things that is that he did was he required everyone who came before him to call him my master and my God. beginning about half the way through his reign in the 80s. So he was installed as emperor in 80 and then was emperor through 96 AD. So to get a sense of then when Luke affirms that Jesus was the Son of God, he is also affirming that Domitian is not. And so this story is told against Domitian, even as it is told about Jesus. That is the background of this story of Jesus' trial before the Roman procurator, Pilate. Now, the trial itself. The traditional understanding of the Pilate trial is that Luke was seeking to portray Pilate as a good guy in order to ingratiate Christians with Romans and to disassociate them from the Jews. That is, that it was a combination of pro-Roman apologetic and of anti-Jewish polemic. And there are various forms of this tradition, this understanding of Luke's purpose. I think that that understanding is flawed and is incorrect. What is happening in this story, I think, is that Luke is appealing to Jews to recognize our involvement, our engagement in the death of the Messiah. This story is told in a spirit of grief and of horror at what it is that we have done. And Pilate is, on the one hand, different than Antiochus Epiphanes. That is, he recognizes that Jesus is innocent and tries to release him. But then, in utter cynicism, he violates his own standards of justice and hands Jesus over because of the demands of the crowd. And who is the crowd? The crowd is us. It is our people. And we then demanded the death of the one who God sent as the King of the Jews, as the one who was sent to save us. The horror of this result and of what is happening here is also further heightened by the choice of Barabbas. Barabbas is characterized by Luke as one who was guilty of murder during the insurrection. Now, regardless of what the specifics are about what happened in Jesus' day in regard to the insurrection, for which we do not know, nor do we have any evidence of Barabbas, or even of the custom of Pilate releasing one whom they asked at the Passover. The description of Barabbas evokes for Luke's audience the memories of the war and of the various factions of what became the Zealot armies that perpetrated the war and caused this unspeakable disaster. That is, the choice of Barabbas in this story is heard by Luke's listeners as the choice of the war, of the choice of insurrection, of murder, as the way by which we demanded that Pilate make his judgment. And so the prevalence of our cries for Jesus' death and for the release of Barabbas is associated, Luke's context and in the context of his audiences, with the choice to go to war, to choose Barabbas and his way of insurrection and murder rather than Jesus' way of reconciliation and peace. So when you tell this story, then have that in mind, that the audience who you are addressing is invited to identify with the people of Israel and to recognize then in the telling of the story the horror of what it is that we have done and what we have chosen. Now, this is fully appropriate for American Christians because of the degree to which we have been involved in the choice of the way of war and of support for an administration that perpetrated a war that was wholly unjust. And so we have in our background also a way of understanding and identifying with what it is that the people of Jerusalem did in their choice. And that is in the background of this story. Now, the next part of the story after Jesus' condemnation, which is distinctive to Luke, is that the daughters of Jerusalem were weeping for him. And Jesus, says to them, "Daughters of Jerusalem, do not weep for me, but weep for yourselves and your children. For the days are coming when they will say, 'Blessed are the barren and the wombs that never bore and the breasts that never nursed.'" What is he referring to? He's referring to what happened to women who were pregnant, to babies and children during the siege and the destruction of Jerusalem, which was an unspeakable tragedy, especially for women who were either responsible for young children or who were pregnant. And so what Luke does in adding this episode of Jesus speaking to the women of Jerusalem who were weeping for him, an allusion to the experience of women during the Jewish war, and especially in the time of the destruction of first Jerusalem and then the temple, in which thousands of women were killed. Now, the story of Jesus' crucifixion is told then as a story of grief and of horror. But in the midst of it, Jesus pronounces forgiveness. So his word, "Forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing," is a word of unspeakable grace in the midst of this wholly unjust execution. One of the emphases, and this is all a matter of tone in the way that you tell the story as well as the content of what Luke has, is that Jesus is innocent. So throughout the story, both Pilate and then at the end of the crucifixion, the centurion who was in charge of his execution recognized that Jesus was innocent. And this is the distinctive emphasis in Luke, is that the charges against Jesus were wholly false and that he was both innocent and righteous. So he is the model of the righteous sufferer and of the innocent one who is victimized by an unjust judicial system. One of the motifs in this story is the mockery of Jesus, first by the leaders, and then by the soldiers, and then by the criminals. Now, in the background of this is a tradition that was present throughout the Roman Empire. Those who were crucified were either traitors against Rome, that is, they were guilty of sedition, or, and more frequently, slaves. Outside the gates of all the major cities of the Roman Empire were a business, a crucifixion business. You could get a slave crucified for what would amount to $3 or $4. So if a slave burned the food or wouldn't have sex with you or spoke in a way that you didn't like, you could just take your slave off and have him crucified. And one of the traditions that is reflected in the mimic dramas that were among the most popular dramas in the Roman world, one of the things that is present throughout those dramas is slaves being crucified. And what is associated with that is always that there's somebody who's making fun of them, who's mocking them. And this clearly reflects what happened when slaves were crucified. The people going into the city would make fun of these slaves and mock them who were on the crosses. That's the background of this mocking of Jesus by the rulers, by the soldiers, and the criminals, is that he endured mockery that was like the mockery that was endured by slaves who were crucified. So you can tell those stories in a way that reflect that cultural experience. Now finally, the death of Jesus is reported by Luke as Jesus crying out with a loud voice, "Father, into your hands I commend my spirit." Now that's in a loud voice. It's not soft, so that's really important that you do that, you know, with significant volume. And the end of the story is a description of the response that Luke expects and hopes that his listeners will have. That is, that they will join the crowds who had gathered there and return home after hearing this story, beating their breasts. That is, grieving and recognizing their own implication, because that's what the beating of the breast meant, was that it was done out of a sense of guilt, of recognition of your own moment, as well as grief. Finally, then, the innocence of Jesus is recognized by the centurion who was in charge of his execution. It has many of the same dynamics as the story of the Green Mile, and that's a movie you might look at, and it's a very painful movie, but it's the story of the execution of an innocent man, and at which even his executioners wept. And the conclusion of the story is then the women who were watching from a distance, and what is implied is that they were weeping, so that you can tell that episode in that tone and spirit. I hope that this will help you in identifying the dynamics of this story, and I would encourage you to learn it by heart and to tell the whole thing on Palm Sunday.